Hi, this is Christopher Sparra, and this is the iTech Gear Weekly, episode number 11. You get a Pixel 6 Pro. Recorded today, Saturday, February 12th, 2022. As I said, I am Christopher Sparra, the editor-in-chief of itechgear.org. And with us today is Mr. Chris Cavula, former contributing editor over at Gear Diary and Pocket Now. What up, Chris?
Not too much. Just trying to chill out over the weekend here.
Yeah, Super Bowl weekend, which is why we're doing this a whole week or a whole day early. And actually, you know, we're probably about 6 or 7 days late because somebody over here had to go ahead and catch COVID, but we won't talk about that just yet. So also joining us today is Mr. Joe McLaughlin, former contributing writer over at Gear Diary and currently the host of the Linux Link Tech Show and Living in the Shade of the 80s Arcade podcast. What's going on, Mr. McLaughlin? How are you?
Oh, I'm doing well. The snow and ice are melting slowly. Overall, I'm very good, and we're going to talk about something that's exciting to me.
Yes, tonight. We are. I do want to go ahead and mention, though, that Dr. Mr. Larry McJunkin, the former co-owner of Wugnet Publications, is under the weather this evening and will not be joining us. So, Larry, if you and our one fan are out there listening, we miss you.
We do, and hopefully you're nice and relaxed in your recliner with that heat pad on it and enjoying some TV and relaxation.
If you do listen to this, try not to laugh at us too hard.
Very true. Yes. But let us go ahead and really get down to brass tacks here. You get a Pixel 6 Pro, and you get a Pixel 6 Pro. No, you didn't.
No, I didn't. Sorry.
At least two of us will be getting one. One of us already has his.
Yeah, I do. I do. Mine came the other day.
One of us had one and doesn't anymore.
That's true. He took it back after about 3 or 4 days. So I was hoping to do a little sort of back and forth kind of review action here. And we might still be able to go ahead and do that. Get a little bit of a trifecta kind of document going on with everything.
How it started was Joel's Note 10 Plus is getting a little long on the tooth. In fact, last week I broke the stylus on it. Since replaced it. But the charge port has been kind of getting wonky. So I don't owe that much more on it. And I started talking to my wife, and I think I do got the spousal approval to go purchase a new Pixel.
You got the ka-chunk of approval.
Uh-huh. Yes. Fortunately this week, we have another event that happened this week, that we'll talk to you a little bit about later.
Because Christopher has a surprise.
But because of the things that happened in that event, I decided that the phone I'm probably going to order is a Pixel 6 Pro with 512 gig is probably what I'm going to order.
So I will tell you that the one that I got is a black 128 gigabyte model. The phone, I've got an unboxing that I did, and I had some really weird issues with the unboxing that I won't get into, but I had to start and stop. I've got 7 little cliplets, if you will, that I'm stringing together for about like a 15 to 17 minute sort of little dealio.
It took you 7 cliplets to get this done, really?
especially since there's practically nothing in the boxes anymore.
I know. We'll talk about what happened in the after show, but
my goodness,
because it was an adventure. And I'm not sure what the cause of the issue was or how, and because I don't know that, I don't know how to get around it to prevent it from happening again. But I got the nice black 128 gigabyte model, and I think I've got it all configured. The case that I ordered, it's just a purely functional case, it's a silicone case, came for it today. The device in and of itself is really, really nice. It's longer and just a tad, it's a tad longer and a tad skinnier than my 12 Pro Max, which is my daily driver. But the screen on this thing is just absolutely beautiful. It is absolutely gorgeous.
Yeah. Good to hear.
I will tell you that the wraparound display is a little bit funky. I keep on hearing Steve Jobs and, you know, going in the back of my, you know, in the back of my head telling me that I'm holding it wrong when things don't happen the way that I want them to happen, you know, because I've got more than one actual piece of skin contacting with the screen. So I may have to turn the wraparound off, but I really like that nice, you know, wraparound look. It looks,
well, you know, I used to love, I had a Galaxy S7 Edge days gone by. And it had one of that time, probably the most gorgeous screen I'd ever seen. Mm-hmm. And I loved it, but that wraparound screen, I was always mistouching stuff because, you know, we've all talked about this before. I'm not a person who thinks that you should never have bezels. You need something to hold on to.
Yep, exactly.
You know? So this Edge stuff, it's gorgeous. It looks beautiful, but sometimes from a handling standpoint, it leaves something to be desired.
Right.
Yep. Yeah. Very, very true. Now this, with the screen, this has got two things that the iPhone really, really doesn't. It's got a paper hole
punch hole cutout camera.
for the camera, the front facing camera. All right. And it's got a under display fingerprint sensor.
Yep. Just like my Note 10 has both those. Mm-hmm. But yeah.
So I don't know how secure that under the screen fingerprint sensor
or any fingerprint sensor for that matter.
Very true.
Yeah.
All right.
Yeah.
But I will say that it's going to be a lot easier to operate than my iPhone because I don't have a passcode. I don't have a 4 or 6
or the passcode. The picture.
I've actually got a pass phrase or password.
Right.
All right. That is no one is ever going to crack that sucker. All right. So every time, and it's like 15, 16 characters. All right.
Right.
So every time I want to go and open my phone in the supermarket or wherever I am out and about when I've got a mask on, I've got to type in this ugly, nasty, long password.
Yeah. Right?
Of course, that's not an Apple issue. That's an issue you created for yourself.
Well, no, that is true. Right. But from a security perspective, I mean, I've got all my credit cards, and I've got
absolutely.
If you do Google Pay, like I use Google Pay, like I use that to pay for groceries today.
Right. Right.
Yeah.
It's Google Pay doesn't feel as tied down as Apple Pay does.
Definitely isn't.
All right. Yeah. And Samsung Pay is the same kind of way. All right. It's not as tied down. And that's the thing that I get very, very concerned about when dealing
with
touchless payments on an Android or Samsung.
It is and it isn't. Because what I have found when I switch phones, when I first go into the app to try to get everything in there, you know, my cards are already in the account, but 9 times out of 10, I have to go back through and do a reauthentication with my bank,
right?
In order to use the thing. So I'm not exactly worried because actually that's a pain in the ass actually.
Right.
But I'm not particularly worried about that, but I can see how it can worry some people.
And it is something that I liked about the Apple that I was always concerned that the Google devices weren't tied down as well. But having said that, are you considering moving some of your stuff over to the Pixel?
So, are you talking about credit cards and whatnot? I've got a few credit card apps or a few credit cards already moved over to both Google and Samsung Pay. All right.
Gotcha.
And we'll see how that goes. I've been playing with this thing and it's a little bit It is running Android 12, and I thought it, which is nice. Out of the box, I think Google has committed to at least, was it 5 years, or maybe that was Samsung they committed to five.
Samsung.
How many years of updates? Was it
four? 5 years? Four major updates, something like that.
All right,
that's Samsung. Pro. That was Samsung with the S22s.
Yeah, so it'll be at least 2-3 years of getting new OS upgrades on this device. I will tell you that the camera on this thing is absolutely positively amazing. It'll do. It's got a 48 megapixel camera on the back, close to 50, I believe is the total rating on this thing. It's got like at its widest angle point on the ultra wide angle camera is 120 degrees. It'll do 4K video, both at 30 frames and 60 frames a second, which is just it's amazing what the camera on this thing will do. All right, this is really going to be an interesting device.
I think the last camera that excited me were the ones that used to be on the Lumias, the 40 plus megapixel Zeiss optics, all that kind of stuff. So this is really exciting news that they've
got. This is really a great camera system. All right,
have you tried removing people from shots with it yet?
Not yet. It does come with Magic Eraser and whatnot.
Really?
Yes, it does. Which I thought was kind of cool. I want to go ahead though and play with it a little bit and see if I can do something like that. I don't know how well that software is going to work, or what kind of processing power for it is really required. I believe it's got 12 gigabytes of RAM in this thing already. It's got the, what's the name of the new Google processor, the
TensorFlow.
The TensorFlow processor is here, so it'll hopefully go ahead and not do it fairly quickly, and it won't make the device hot. I know that I've tried to do some of that on the desktop with I believe Pixelmator makes a Magic Eraser product that I believe is now part of Pixelmator Pro. And it does an okay job as far as, you know, depending on how large of an area you're trying to remove and how prominent it is. The algorithms that drive the I've got to put background in this big blotch of area that you're now trying to erase. It does an okay sort of operation for that on the desktop. I don't know how it's going to work on how that's the implementation of that kind of technology on the Pixel 6 Pro is going to work, especially if the person that's or object that you're trying to erase is that prominent, you know?
So let me ask you this. This particular Pixel, I know they've had a lot of trouble with software bugs since it came out. Mm-hmm. But I also know that Google's been really aggressive about trying to correct these as quickly as kind of very Apple-like in that way, because Apple usually is very aggressive about those things once they're pointed out. I should say once they're pointed out, right? Sure. So I'm curious: have you been having any issues with any of those things, or have things been going really, really smooth for you?
For me, so far, because I'm really not pushing the device really hard. All right. But so far, I haven't really bumped into any what I would consider to be quirks or problems. I'm really, but it's not my daily driver, so I'm really not pushing it too
hard. That was kind of my next question, because I know historically your daily driver has been an Apple device.
Mm-hmm.
And there's always those challenges when you go to a non-Apple device of dealing with, okay, now I'm away from iMessages. Not so much the blue-green bubble thing, but the okay, are my messages getting to me? Are they, you know, stuck in the iMessage cloud? That kind of thing.
Right. And that is a problem. And I knew that's one of the things that I mentioned to Larry during the week, because he swapped SIM cards. You know, he got the new device, pulled his regular SIM out of his iPhone, and stuck it in the Pixel 6 Pro. And I sent him a couple of text messages and he didn't respond right away. And it's not that, you know, I need to be responded to right away, but I usually, he's very good about being diligent of watching his device for messages that come in, et cetera. And after about an hour or two, he didn't had said anything. So I went, huh, I wonder if his phone number is still captured by iMessage.
Apple. Yeah.
All right. And that, he's not getting it, you know, the updates because he hasn't turned it off. And no, he said, you know, when I talked to him, he said, no, the clerk at the phone store had said that might be happening. So he went and he checked things on the account and we turned it off in iCloud. And then all of a sudden I got a barrage of stuff hit him all at once. And I was stuck in that. So he did kind of fix it. And I think he'll have to fix it again, because I think he's actually going to go back for the 13 Pro Max. He's taking he's already returned his Pixel 6 Pro. He's looking at a 13 Pro Max at this point.
Oh gosh. Well, you know, we've talked about this before, that, you know, people have to understand that you're going to switch to platforms like that. It isn't just a matter of slapping your card in the new device.
No, especially if you're going from an iPhone.
There's more to it going back and forth. Yeah. Right.
If you're going from iPhone to iPhone, it's not easy. An issue. If you're going from iPhone to Android, you've got things you need to go ahead and check on.
Yes.
Yeah.
Yes. And it's less of a problem going from Android to iPhone. So
very much so, because onboarding into iMessages is a lot easier than getting out of it.
yeah.
That's very, very true.
That's like my wife and I, I've been yammering about it for last week, and hey, at least she's letting me talk about it, which is a good thing. Because a lot of times when I start to go techie, she just kind of like shuts herself off.
The eyes glaze over and that's it. It's all gone. Right?
But she's like, why don't you stay? Because I said, well, why don't I go for an iPhone 13, you know, instead, just in case they don't have this available right away. And I'm like, and she's like, you know, you'd hate it. I'm like, yeah, well, see, I love my iPad. My work phone is an iPhone 11, so I do get to play with iOS on a phone. But to be brutally honest, I don't do apps on my iPhone. It's for paging, it's for phone calls, for work, when I'm not on a Zoom. In fact, I use, actually quite often I'll use that for Zoom audio, because I used to have a wireless headset that would let me go all the way downstairs, but not anymore. For some reason.
Gotcha.
But so then I'll switch my audio over to the phone. That way, you know, if it's just a big long talk, which a lot of times work calls are, that way I can at least, like, that was my week this week. So it's during week at work. So it's like the more and more I'm thinking about it, you know, the Pixel 6 Pro, I always said from back when I had Pixel phones, or before that, I had two Nexuses. Had the Nexus, the Google Nexus, the first one.
Yeah.
Then
I did too.
The six. I think I had the six. Okay. Which was, I think, either the four, I don't know. I had two Nexuses. I had a Pixel 2. I've had multiple Notes because I've had the Note 3. And then I have the Note 10 Plus.
Mm-hmm.
And, probably the most irritating for me thing about Samsung is how much of the native Android interface they hide. Like when I upgraded from Android 11 to Android 12, I really couldn't tell that much of a difference, to be brutally honest. And I think that now for some people, that's okay. For me, I want the change because I'm a dork. Yeah. because some people like, and that's why iPhones kind of great on me, because it doesn't really matter whether you have the 11, the 12, or the 13, other than performance, there's really no difference. Mm-hmm. Tiny things, but you know,
right. No, Apple's very evolutionary, not revolutionary.
Yes.
Every increment's going to have just a little bit more.
Right. That's part of the market though, that they're targeting. They want that. People like that consistency, you know, as many
they
people,
do,
you know, as like people us that aren't us.
But yeah,
people that aren't us right. want that consistency, because the toaster should always work like a toaster. Should always right. work like a toaster. It shouldn't change, you know.
Right.
And that's fine. And there are little ads, and there are nice little ads. I'll give them mm-hmm. that. I mean, you guys know I've considered. I like what I'm seeing with the Pixel Pro. I've considered getting one. Obviously, it would be hard for me to make it my daily driver, short of abandoning, you know, those right. Apple services that we're used to. Right. But it would certainly be a good secondary driver for me.
Right.
But I can't justify it because I don't have any kind of discount program for it. So
yep.
I can't justify the full retail on it.
Yep.
Sure.
But I'm sure once I've got mine that Chris and I over the weeks will probably.
Yes, we will.
Come together and probably do a conjoined interview.
Or yes. Review yes. And we might
talk me into one.
Right.
Absolutely. And we might even get Larry to go ahead and
get his thoughts. Yeah.
Get his thoughts, too, because he did have one and he was heavily into it for the less than a week that he had it.
But I know he liked it a lot, too.
Right. So. He really, really did. But there are some things that are very specific that he was looking for.
Right.
That just
gotcha.
He just couldn't get past.
Well, he brought one thing up in our emails back and forth on it, because that conversation was hot and heavy.
Yes, it was.
But yes, the one thing he mentioned is something that would never bother me. Is that's the backlight.
Adaptive brightness, right? The adaptive brightness.
I never turn it on because I've always hated it.
Yeah,
right. And to be very, very honest, I can't do it because it's never worked right on my iPhones.
Yep.
So I don't use it at all. It's a feature that
I suspect that it works right. It doesn't work the way we want it to.
Right. Yeah, I'm
the same way. I turn it off too, so I get it.
I think it would work better for me is if I can set a guardrail mm-hmm. Your adaptive wants to set it for this, set it 5% higher. You know,
I would be that. I'd be there with you as well. I think that would work for me as well. Right. Because what I find happens with all of these adaptive things is it's also if your finger gets near the sensors, sometimes it all of a sudden will go brighter or darker on you. And it's mm-hmm. like, and it's a dramatic change. It's not just a subtle change.
It is.
And that just drives me nuts. I can't stand it. To me, it's like watching the flipper. I'm one of those people. I used to have a problem when I was in school because, you know, they used to use fluorescent lights everywhere. Right.
Right.
And I could see the flicker. See the flicker and it drove me crazy. I couldn't work in that environment.
Well, no, it gave you headaches.
It actually triggered
migraines in me.
And in offices, and when I work in an office that has fluorescent lights, I always put a regular incandescent or even LED nowadays, but mostly incandescent bulbs.
Well, you know, you have to, or otherwise you end up getting a brain cloud.
Exactly. Right. So I get it. If that was a problem for him, I get that.
Yeah.
I love those bright display. So
maybe it's because we're older guys. I mean, we're all in our 50s.
I'm gonna have to say no.
Yeah. But it always goes too dim for me when I have the adaptive on.
I agree.
It always does. And that's the thing. It never, in my estimation, it doesn't work right. It either goes way too bright for too long and the device gets hot, or the battery life tanks,
right?
Or it never gets bright enough.
Yeah.
All right.
Yeah.
And nothing works, and it's just frustrating as hell. And all of a sudden I wonder what's going on. And I go and I check the brightness and I can see it tweaking itself. And I'm like, that's why.
I tend to leave my really toward the brighter end of things. I'm not worried about the battery drain or any of that, but I tend to leave it toward the brighter things. So I like what Joel was saying, if we could put some bumpers or some guardrails on saying, I don't want you to leave this percentage range of brightness. While you stay within that range, go nuts.
Yeah.
If the sensor is blocked or at a certain level, wait a few seconds before you decide to change. That way it'll get past when you get your thumb.
Which, by the way, goes back to my statement about bezels, but we won't even go there.
Yeah.
Thank you. But I will tell you that the device in and of itself, it's about as heavy as the 12 Pro Max.
Really?
Yeah, it's a solid device. And you know, it's got Gorilla Glass Victus all around it. All right. And it's a slippery nightmare. It is a slick phone, but that's partially the problem. It's slick. It slips and slides all over the damn place.
That's kind of the Surface Duo too, wasn't it? Bumpers, it slides all over the place.
Exactly. And that's part of a problem. It's one of the reasons why I was having so much trouble with it. I couldn't get it to stay still on my desk. It slid off the desk a few times because of the device wide camera bump on the back.
Yeah.
So
which this has too, but yeah.
Mm-hmm.
Anyway. Joel and I have similar vehicles in some ways, and mm-hmm. we both recently got newer vehicles, and I'm going to be curious to see how that bump fits in the tray on his.
Yep. I'm a little worried about that.
Well, for the wireless charging. Yeah.
And I actually pasted a case I might consider in the chat window there, Spiggin Tough Armor for the Pixel 6 Pro.
Okay.
We'll see. I don't necessarily like those, that kind of a beefy a case. I like a thin case myself.
Mm-hmm.
But I might consider that. But if you look at how that is on the back, it actually completely eliminates the bump.
It does. So it does. And that's,
you know, and I noticed that I have an iPhone 11 Pro Max. Noticed that when I put the case on it, the Apple, my brain stopped, the soft case, the rubbery case, that basically the bump goes away.
Right.
So I like that. That's okay by me.
So, we'll have to see. I am worried about that. Because,
you know, Joel, there, you may have more than one choice available to you.
I know.
All right, because Samsung did have they
unpacked a lot of stuff.
Their unpacked event this week, and it was a very interesting time, you know.
Yep. Well, they released the S22, S22 Plus, and the Note replacement, the S22 Ultra. And let's be clear, it is the Note replacement. Mm-hmm. Comes with the S Pen. It's styled just like a Note. It's a Note.
And they have actually officially said Note, the Note name no longer exists.
Yep. Right. The Note, ding dong, the Note is gone.
Right. So. And I think the big delay, because there was no 21 version of the Note. I think really what they were trying to do is synchronize the Note as the top end of the S series, which it really is. I mean, the Note, the S22 Ultra, I keep wanting to say Note, has the best camera in the line, the most amount of RAM. You can get all the way up to a terabyte in this sucker. You know, it really is the top of the S22 line. So if you love the Samsung S series, that's the one you want.
I'm going to be very curious how the camera in the Ultra compares to the Pixel Pro's camera.
Right. Well, that's not going to be too difficult of a get.
Right.
It's not. Because a S22 Ultra should be here.
You're getting one
in about a month.
Yeah, and that's actually what's driving me away from the Samsungs is because you can pre-order it now, but you can't get it until the 25th. And I'm like, actually, it might even be worse than that because the pre-orders might have sold out.
They did.
Yeah, they did,
which is why it won't get here until the 12th to the 15th,
which means I'm gonna be perfectly happy with the Pixel 6 Pro. And the main reason, the one thing I always tell people, if you've hated Android in the past and never had a Pixel, get a Pixel. You're gonna change your mind.
Very, very true.
Yeah, I think so.
Very, 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 very true. I will tell you that the Flip 3 5G that I've got is really, really nice, and the interfaces between One UI and or the differences between One UI and the Pixel 6 Pro are very different.
Yes. Right?
That launcher is very different. The way that it interacts with the device,
and it's not near as
devices connected to it is very different.
It's not near as heavy or near as bad as some of Samsung's past interfaces. when UI really made a huge difference.
Yes. Yeah. But, I didn't like Sense UI.
It was awful.
It was not. It there's too much junk and gunk.
Well, over the top of it.
Nothing was worse than Moto Blur either. But
Blur was horrible.
But I know when I had the S7 Edge, I was doing nothing but trying to tweak the interface all the time. It seemed that's all you were doing all the time. Because what would work for this, then it would look stupid in that app, and then that would look good. But then it interfered too much with what was going on back in the day.
So like the camera, they have a quad camera on the S22 with 108 megapixel wide.
Yep.
And a 12 megapixel ultra wide and 10 megapixel telephoto. It's the best camera is on the ultra as usual. And the other two actually have the same camera, the 50, the 12 and the 10.
Yep.
So,
the thing we always have to keep in mind with all of these things though, the mechanics of the camera are great and they're always impressive, but it always comes down to the software, guys. It always comes down to, because Apple has done a lot with just software.
Yep.
To make optics even more impressive that don't have the same specs. Agreed. Just like they make the machines don't have the same RAM, yet somehow they're able to get the performance out of them.
Right.
You know, it's all about the software. It's all about the software. So I'm going to be anxious to see the real world testing when these things all are out there and they're, you know, there's going to be compares out there.
Oh yeah.
Over and over.
Really should be comparisons between the standard S22 pluses and the regular S22, because the plus and the regular S22 only get 8 gig of RAM. And you get 12 when you go with 256 or higher on the S22 Ultra.
Well, you know, there's 12 gigabytes of RAM in the Pixel.
Right. That too. Well, that's on every storage level though. That's the cool thing. Yeah. But
it is. So, you know, good stuff coming. Good. You know, I mean, you're going to get your Pixel 6 Pro. I've got mine. We'll get together on the site and we'll work it out.
Yep.
And we'll put together some sort of
I won't get though is an S8 Ultra tablet.
Isn't going to get one either. So go ahead, Joel. What's going on with that?
The pre-orders are sold out, which I'm still trying to figure that out, because let's be brutally honest. Google has done nothing with tablet interfaces Nexus 9?
Something like that. It's been a minute.
And we talk about, they talk a lot about, Samsung and how they've handled, things like the multitasking pretty well on their devices and all this kind of thing. And that may be true, but it often doesn't work well outside of the range of certain apps, right? And that's what I'm thinking is going to happen with this tablet. It's like some apps are going to play very well, some won't. And that's the nature of Android on tablets so far. I'm hoping with 12L and maybe even 13 that improves. So maybe people are anticipating that by buying Tab 8, which will get these updates, maybe they kind of have a device that will, keep them in the Google sphere, but also get them a tablet experience, that they want. I don't know. I'm hoping so.
But here's an interesting thing, though, with the S8, though. It includes the S Pen.
It does.
Yeah.
I thought that was an interesting inclusion.
I'm like, would it be nice if Apple would just, especially in the pros, just throw the pencil in there,
Because you guys have heard me say this before, when you talk about pencil and pen experiences, and we've all talked about our differences and what we find comfortable and not comfortable. I still find the Apple Pencil to be the most comfortable of these devices.
It is.
However, it's not the most convenient.
No.
So... But it certainly is the most comfortable. And I do like the fact you just slap it on the edge to charge. And I know there's other people have done similar things since then. But it would be nice. I'm with you, Joel. I mean, for what you're paying for that, it'd be really, really nice if they would throw that in, because it's just a nice have. It's a nice have.
A lot of people actually, a lot of software comes out for Apple Pencil, in my opinion.
It does.
I said not a lot does. And I think there is a good selection. I'm not going to argue about that, But I think that a lot of people really who buy iPads don't really think about the pencil that much. Because,
no.
But they would if it came with it.
But yeah. But here's the thing. That's the part that's a little different. That Samsung still doesn't quite get. The Samsung, the S Pen works very well with Samsung-driven apps. True. It doesn't integrate well with the OS. Whereas the Apple Pencil integrates at the OS level. If I open Safari, I can write in the address field and put an address in. I can write on the notepad anywhere. I can scribble on darn near anything and get something to happen.
Yeah, so I agree with that.
It's more OS level integrated, so that the experience is more OS level. And Windows, they're trying to do that with the Surface a little bit. They're not quite there, but they're trying to do a better job of integrating it more at the OS level. And I think that's what you got to do with a pen or a pencil to make it more useful. Does that make it mean we need it all the time? No, as you and I both know, we don't. If you're primarily doing something like sitting and taking notes, that need to jump to something else, like, I got to open a browser and do this. I don't have to pull out the keyboard to do that if I don't want to. That's the whole point.
Actually, I'm just looking through some of the other specs on the S8 tablets. The Ultra has an 11,200 milliamp hour battery. That is huge.
Yes, it is.
It is. Interestingly enough, if you go to Samsung.com right now and you try to order it, the S8 Plus is the only one that's available, and it's only available on Verizon. All of their Wi-Fi models are gone. The S8 Ultra is sold out and gone.
Yeah. Yeah.
The S8 in and of itself is sold out and gone.
It makes me really want to pick one of these things up with how fast they're selling. And I've always I'm saying, if you're buying it, if you want a really great Android tablet, the Samsung S series tablets are the best ones.
Yeah.
The only ones aren't junk.
Yeah, and that's true. They're really the only company that really has a tablet product out there that's still, viable. And then, interestingly enough, the S8.
Hang on. Amazon still goes okay with the Fire tablets, but I would argue
it's probably not Android. Well, it's Android based, but it's no.
I would agree with you. I would totally agree with you. But it's the only other thing that's running the operating system that I know of.
Right, that's correct.
It's been financially viable.
Now the major differences between these devices, all right, the S8 has an 11 inch LTPS LCD display. The S8 Plus has a 12.4 Super AMOLED display, all right, which is just about the same size as the iPad Pro. All right. It's just a squeak smaller than the iPad Pro. The Galaxy Tab S8 Ultra is a 14.6 inch diagonal Super AMOLED display. And oh my goodness, this is really like holding a 14 inch laptop screen in your hand.
And what's interesting is we've heard that, there's always been rumors the last few months about Apple making a bigger tablet as well. So there must be some studies out there that show there's a demand for a tablet to be larger. And I find that fascinating.
So do I, to tell you the truth. I don't know that it's something that I would ever find a true need for. When I was traveling a lot more for work, between 20, I really want to say 2016 and 2019, having that iPad Pro was a godsend to be able to work on the plane, be able to watch movies and whatever else. All right. I didn't have to pull out the big MacBook Pro and risk everybody eyeballing that, or even knucklehead in front of me leaning their seat chair back and snapping the display.
I would sit on the airplane. I have a 12.9. I've had 12.9s for a while on the iPad Pros. And there were two things that stick out. One is I could sit on the plane and work with a pen and not have to worry about things in front of me. It could be on my partly on my lap or down on my tray or whatever.
Absolutely.
But that 12.9 screen lines up beautifully with an 8.5 by 11 sheet of paper. So if I had a PDF of a document, it was like reading the document. It was the sweet spot for me size wise.
Absolutely. It was a sweet spot. Absolutely.
And even though that S8 has a 14-inch display, it actually wasn't the biggest tablet that Samsung ever made.
No, wasn't there a 17-inch that did it or a 16-inch or Galaxy, something like that?
The Galaxy View 18.4-inch screen.
Oh my God.
Oh my goodness.
Yeah. Now that one, I don't think that actually had batteries. I believe it was designed to just set it up I always wonder about them, but I can never justify it.
Although
it was ridiculously expensive, but yeah.
Didn't I read that the Plus and the Ultra actually, because you mentioned the bigger battery, I not also read that the battery life is longer than a comparable iPad?
Probably.
Because of all that, which is great. And so again, there's reasons why I think this device has some appeal to people. I don't know that it'll replace my iPad anytime soon, but
I think it's designed not so much for ones people who want to take it places, but for people that just want to have a large tablet at their house that they can sit with on the recliner.
Well, I talk to people at work all the time, and we ever since the pandemic started, and we're all out of our houses, our ability to sort of limit ourselves to an 8 to 5 or 9 to 5 kind of day has gone away. We often find ourselves, we got to do a little thing here in the evening, or we got to, and people will be sitting there on their couches talking to me on headphones in a conference call and doing what they need to do on their tablet, because you can use the tablet, connect into your servers at work. You can do whatever you want to do.
Right.
And for quick kind of tasks like that, it's actually quite functional. So I can see, why people are doing that. And I'm with you, Joel. I think people will buy a one, and they don't buy it for the way reasons they used to buy them. I think they, it's the, I'll call it the short-term computing need, right? Yep. It's not just consumption anymore. It used to just be about consumption. Now it's about, I just also need to do something quick at work, and I don't want to boot up the computer, that kind of thing.
Right. And I will tell you though, that I have never really, If I'm home, even if I'm going to go ahead and, relax on the couch, I bounce back and forth between my phone and a 13-inch MacBook Air.
Right.
All right.
And I don't use my phone for work stuff like that at all.
Well, and neither do I. All right.
But I bounce back and forth. My tablet is what I do.
Well, but a lot of times you have to have your phone for that MFA thing.
Yes.
So, yeah.
Yes. Which is why the phone is there.
Yeah. That's, to be fair, that's true.
Yep. But if I'm at home, all right, and the laptop is around, I would much prefer a laptop screen as opposed to, a phone or a tablet screen. The tablet is a little bit better than the phone because you've got a lot more real estate to be able to work with, and actually see the website or whatever it is that you're trying work with or do something. My wife Michelle gets very upset at times because I can do things on my phone or not my phone, my laptop that she's trying to do on her phone and she can't figure out how to do it. And I'm like, aha, there you go. That's why, I mean, that you've hit the glass ceiling. All right. You've hit the problem
don't use a phone for that stuff.
Right.
That's exactly
right. Now, and she uses her phone for everything. Absolutely everything.
Yeah, my mom's the same way.
If she wants to surf the internet, she wants to be on social media, she wants to be on, take a camera and edit her pictures, everything. Absolutely everything right on her phone. And that's nice, lovely, wonderful, and good, but I can't do it.
See, I don't need to be on my laptop for that. But for me, the tablet serves very well. And I can get into things faster on a tablet. And that's why I tend to use it.
Yeah,
for that kind of stuff.
It depends what it is. Like
it depends on what it is. That's exactly right.
Yeah. That's like I should probably, I have both my new laptop and my Surface Pro 6 inches away from my work laptop. I should probably take the Surface Pro downstairs, but I'll tell you one big reason why I don't. It's not lappable.
Oh, the Surface Pro? No, Surface Pro is lappable.
I saw a review done in the last week or so comparing the Surface Pro and the iPad Pro. And what I found, I mean, it, most of the points were valid points, but what I found fascinating, first of all, is why were they comparing them? I didn't quite understand. But the thing that I didn't understand was they were up and down about how wonderful and that the Surface Pro keyboard was more lappable than the iPad Pro with the Magic Keyboard because the iPad Pro keyboard was too stiff. And to me, that's exactly why it's more lappable as opposed to the Surface Pro keyboard, which flexes too much for me. It's not lappable to me.
Well, the funniest thing is that it wasn't always like that because they did have a harder keyboard on what I think Surface Pro 3, I think it was.
Early on, anyway, yeah.
But that's kind of the annoying thing. And that's why I haven't taken it downstairs yet. Cause honestly, it's got all the power I need for a PC.
Right.
With exception of when I need to edit a video and then my new laptop is the place I want to go because it's 10 times faster than the Pro 6.
Of course.
But you know, speaking of needing bigger screens and more power and whatnot. Interestingly enough, Apple has got their universal control feature out in beta. Now I know, Chris, this is something that's sort of near and dear to your heart. Why don't you give us the lowdown on this?
So I use it quite a bit myself already in beta. I've been playing with it. And I think the thing is up until now, what they had was a thing that was called handoff. So if you had your devices nearby, you get a little pop-up icon on the other device that you were not working on. That might be, you know, it was only for certain apps. So, for example, if you were on your iPhone and looking at a website in Safari, Safari on your Mac might pop up and it would show the same link and you could basically move from one machine to the other doing that. It also would let you share your clipboard as long as you were using the same Apple account. There were things like that that were kind of helpful. What they've done, and then they extended that whole notion a little further so that if you have an iPad sitting, you know, near your computer, you could treat it as sort of a secondary screen to your computer. And they refer to that as sidecar. And there was some other interoperability above that. But basically, it was a screen for your computer. Now they've gone to universal control, which at its root, at its core, is sharing the same keyboard and mouse for all your devices. So your iPad or even another Mac is sitting next to you can have multiple computers. It doesn't have to be an iPad.
Correct.
But they can all be, these devices can be sitting next to each other. It doesn't operate with your iPhone, just your iPads and your Macs. But the point is they can be near each other. You can specify which side of it is on. So there's some continuity for you. But the short form is it will not only share the keyboard and mouse, you can drag files back and forth. So if I have Microsoft Word document on my iPad, I can open up my Files app on my iPad. I can drag it to my desktop on my MacBook.
Right.
I can drag it. I can, you know, or drag it across to another one or whatever I want to do. That has made it almost seem like there's a lot of, it's like you got shared storage almost. It behaves kind of like that.
Sure.
You can move things in and out of apps. And you just use the same mouse going back and forth. There are some limitations. There are some challenges. I found, for example, when I'm on if I'm doing my work at work and I'm on a VPN, even though my local network didn't go away and my Mac and my iPad can still talk to my printer, because I have a VPN on my MacBook, it will no longer allow me to universal control the iPad. And I'm sure that's something that'll be worked on going forward because again, the local network didn't go away. They just put a VPN network on front as well.
Right.
So it should work, but it's not quite there. But again, it's in beta. I think it's one of the most exciting things to come to the Mac for a while. Again, it's been more of an evolutionary thing because these things have sort of built on themselves. But I think, you know, again, if you're in a work at home kind of situation, it tends to give you a lot of flexibility. You know, I can put the iPad there. I can take the iPad away.
And if you have a Mac.
Right.
But that's the whole point. I mean, that's their whole animal is you're using their ecosystem, right? I mean, it would be nice if all this stuff interoperated on a universal level. But I really think that the crap to make that work regardless of who did it, I just don't see it happening anytime soon.
That's like, there is one thing I do absolutely love about Samsung devices. It's a little different on the tablets, but is Samsung DeX, which is not really not like universal control at all, but it's just another take of integrating your mobile device into your work thing. Like, for example, I just fired DeX up on my phone, and I got a, in fact, it wasn't until the Samsung Series S10 series that they added the client, a client to your desktop. It used to be you had to just plop it in a dock, but now you have a client. In fact, it's wireless. Like, my phone's not connected at all to my laptop here, but I'm sitting here looking at my phone in a desktop mode screen.
Sure.
And the one thing I absolutely like about that is I can go into the phone, into my files, and I can drag images from there to my PC, and it'll do the same thing that Universal Control does.
Absolutely. And, no, there are some hardware requirements that yes. Joe alluded to here. Universal Control specifically will work with a MacBook Pro 2016 or later, a MacBook 2016 or later, a MacBook Air 2018 or later, the iMac 2017 or later, the 5K iMac Pro late 2015 and later. Let's see, a Mac Mini 2018 and later, and a Mac Pro 2019 and later. Right. If you don't have any of that Mac hardware, Universal Control is dead to you.
I would agree. All right, and I do want to add to what Joel was saying, because the integration of the on the Android side, I mean, DeX was really a way of making a big monitor work. To give you more screen receipt. That's really what was, and that's its focus. But what Microsoft has done in Windows 11 is they have an app called Your Phone. And it originally only worked with pretty much Samsung devices, but it now also works with Microsoft Duo and other devices, other devices, still limited. Right. And it's still very controlled and very limited. But yes, you can run your Android apps.
It does sense, though, interestingly enough, there's a stub that runs automatically on the Windows 10, Windows 11 side, and it will see your other Android device that's sitting there and say, do you want to go ahead and connect this thing? And I've constantly got to go ahead and say no and leave me alone.
Right.
But the one thing that I did want to make certain is you know, you've got all that Mac hardware requirements on the desktop side.
Yeah.
There are some iPad requirements. You have to have an iPad Pro, which would be the an M1 iPad Pro or the current iPad Pros, an iPad Air third generation or later, an iPad sixth generation and later, and an iPad Mini fifth generation and later. On the Mac side, you have to be running the latest version of Mac OS. I believe it is 12.3 beta that you have to have. And I believe on the iOS side, or the iPad OS side, I think, isn't it 15.4 beta?
Yes, I believe so.
That you have to have in order to get these things to talk. So if you don't have a Mac in any of those generations that I mentioned, or if you don't have an iPad
I would argue that's a lot of devices. I mean, you're talking about going back as far as the 2016 MacBook.
Yeah.
MacBook was the low end of the low end in terms of performance. Yes. It was a higher end device in terms of portability, but it was a low end performance device. And I've tried it. It works. That's amazing. You know,
it's probably one of the last bigger features that generation of computer is going to
absolutely
get.
Absolutely true.
Right. So I would not expect too much more support coming for that MacBook. Number one, and number two, if you're looking for any big features, the current OS, as long as you can get whatever the current flavor of OS is on that MacBook, it ain't going to be around for long.
Right.
And the thing I also want to mention, like I said, when you do something like your phone on Windows, which again is a very impressive thing, and I've played with it and used it in conjunction with my Android devices, and it's nice. And I've heard people say it'd be nice if it worked with an Apple device as well. obviously there's limitations on Apple's side as to why that doesn't happen, but it's nice. It's a nice thing, but it all feels very compartmentalized and containerized, whereas Universal Control feels like I just put these things together next to each other and they're just talking.
And right. And you didn't have to do anything. All you had to do was just put the thing on the table and that's it.
And wait a few seconds for them to recognize each other as being. Yep. That's all you had to do. And that kind of not in my face problem. And if I choose to use it, it's there. If I choose not to use it, it's still just there.
It's still just there, but you don't use it. Right. It's that wireless connectivity that is really is really, really kind of making it nice. And you know what else is also really nice and involves that wireless connectivity? Apple has announced Tap to Pay for their iPhone devices, which I think is about time, Bubba. That's all I got to say. It's about time.
Well, but you have to be careful with stuff like that because there were people in that sort of pay station market. Mm-hmm. And whenever you step into those kinds of fields that you weren't in, you got that whole monopoly thing over your head, right? You're going to take more control out of more of your utility vendors. So you gotta be very cognizant of what you're doing there. But yeah, I'm glad to see it for one.
Right.
I think it's about time for stuff like that to happen. And
right now it's not available yet. All right. It's going to be out with a version of iOS later this year. And it's only going to work with the iPhone XS or newer. So it's
still going back a few years.
Still going back a few years, right? But you know, if you're the kind of person that sits on your phone for a number of years, for years and years and years, waiting for it to give up the ghost before you go out and get a new one because it still works, why would you need, right? Which is reasonable.
Which is my wife. My wife has a 10R still.
My boys. Both my boys are still on 10Rs.
Yeah, my brother is still on a 6S.
Ooh, oh,
yeah,
that's really old.
God,
yeah.
He's a trooper.
Yeah, he's looking at the 13. So he just hasn't made that move yet. So he's
tell him to wait and go for the 14 when it comes out. I told him.
Okay, so I had to read. I'm like, they didn't have Tap to Pay before. No, it's just Tap to Pay other iPhone users.
You'll be able to use the NFC chip in a card and tap it against your phone.
Right.
That's different than the Tap to Pay where you took your device and tap it against the pay station.
See, that's kind of one of my criticisms is Apple will call things
right. But the nice thing about this, though,
yeah.
The nice thing about this, though, I mean, with the way that Apple Pay currently works, it's your phone and a terminal at the store. All right. This is going to allow
your phone to be the terminal.
Right. This allows your phone to be the terminal and allows me to go ahead and pay you for the services that you've got right then and there.
Makes me wonder if it'll
better yet. You know, hey, Dad, can I have $5 to go to the movies with so and so?
So
all I got to do is grab the phone and doink, there you go. And he's got his phone. There you go.
I just want to know, will they put an I in front of it and copyright it?
Right.
I just want to know.
I pay? Yes. Who knows?
I pay. Yeah. You pay.
Yes. Yes, I do.
It'll be called iTap or iTap to Pay or something like that.
Something like that. So this should be an interesting sort of thing that happens later on because this will be an interesting thing to have happen. It's not me sending Venmo or PayPal anymore, and I've got to do it. Yeah. And the cloud has got to be the intermediary. If I've got to pay you some money, I owe you $5 for whatever it is. Just a matter of bringing our phones together and boop, there you go.
Uh-huh. Well, and other ones have had that the phone-to-phone stuff before, but this is actually, I can actually take my NFC-enabled card, my freaking credit card, and tap it to pay it.
Yep.
Right.
That's a different thing.
Yeah. which actually probably means you can probably use Google Pay with it too, because it's the same concept.
Yep. I would think you're right, or potentially right. Whether they limit it in some way, I don't know. But yes,
I don't think that they will. I don't think that they will because I mean, if you're if you're an independent contractor, you're a landscaper, which my son-in-law does during the spring and summer months, right? I don't have any cash on me. I don't want to write a check.
Right.
All right, but I've got my iPhone. I've got my phone here. He should be able to accept payments.
And keep in mind,
Google Pay.
Every payment that they process right now, Apple gets a slice off. Right. So why would they want to restrict something that would give them more chunks? I don't know.
This is what I'm saying.
Right. Yeah,
this is what I'm saying. So
we'll see if it happens. It could, because I use the death out of Google Pay. I really do. Like whenever if I see a store or a gas station that supports it, I use it because one nice thing about it is it always generates a different credit card number every.
Yes, exactly.
Yeah. Use it.
Although it amazes me how many stores I've gone into to use Apple Pay, and the clerk didn't even know they had the capability.
Yeah, they never do. They never,
and they always seem shocked when you hold your phone there. What are you doing? I'm paying.
Yep.
You know, there's always a sort of interaction that you have to have. It's amazing how often that happens. You would think they would know, especially since they're a much younger generation than I am, usually.
Very true.
Very true. But the other interesting Apple story is the AirTag update.
Yeah, another wireless technology.
Yes, yes. Which is really kind of nice because from a stalking perspective or a human trafficking sort of problem, this is the first thing that everybody thinks about. All of a sudden, out of nowhere, you know, you're being tracked, you're being followed, you're being watched, and now I don't even have to do that. I don't have to. Right. I don't have to be around to do that. I don't have to physically follow you. Tossed this coin-sized thing at you. It fell into your purse,
backpack,
or whatever, and there you go.
They said all that, and it's envy they actually done it. But
So what I find fascinating is, you know, this isn't a new problem. I mean, Tile had the same issue, and other manufacturers in the space had the same issue. But and if anything, Apple's probably done more to try to address the privacy side of it, probably because of the high profile that they have. They've done more to try to address it than anybody else.
They have more features built into it too. It's like, because every iPhone acts basically as an extension and can find that tag.
So the ability to find things, there's more points looking, I guess I would say, than there are with things like Tile and whatnot. Right. So that makes it more useful, but it also makes it easier tracking kind of thing.
Yes.
And I guess that's good and bad, obviously. And we've sort of talked about this before, I suppose. But the thing that is that I find fascinating with all this is that they, with all that they're doing, they are also taking the teeth out of this thing to be used as sort of a theft deterrent. You're not going to want to put it on your bag going through the airport because some of these features make it less useful in that thing. It's more of a, I've lost it, now I need to find it kind of thing. And that really kind of limits its usefulness a little bit too. Yep. So the ability to not have, the limiting of the ability to track also makes it less of a theft deterrent, because what's to stop somebody from just taking it off?
Yeah. Oh, well, I'm looking at some of their changes here. The first one kind of makes me wonder if it doesn't make it worse, because it says that upcoming software update, every user setting up an AirTag will see a new message that clearly states AirTag is meant to be used for tracking belongings, not for tracking people or stalking. It's like a normal person
out.
Think about that until you point it out.
Yeah.
True enough.
That's kind of dumb.
But if you look at its behavior, it's going to, you know, squawk and do things.
Well, hopefully it will do them a lot earlier and a lot quicker. I know that I've had that happen a couple times here where I know I have I bought about close to 8 AirTags, maybe a couple more. Everybody's got one on their keys. All right. Yeah. I wish that there would be a way of sticking something like that on a TV remote, because God knows.
Yeah, there you go. Yep.
You know, because God knows. I would love to be able to go ahead and do that. The problem is, though, it could take hours or days prior to this update for a unknown air tag or unknown accessory detected or air tag found moving with you dialog box to show up on your phone, right?
Yeah,
it would take a while,
but again, if you put it on your bag and somebody stole your bag and it shows up right away, they're gonna know, oh, I'm being tracked, and they're gonna take it off the bag. So yep. You really haven't, you have, as far as a theft deterrent, you've kind of crippled it as a theft deterrent. However, as a loss finder,
yes,
you haven't really heard it at all.
Correct.
And I would agree. And I have to tell you, I mean, I certainly have Find My turned on a lot of my devices.
Yep.
And I can't tell you how many times I've driven away from the house only to be told that I left my iPad behind.
Right.
You know.
Right. And back you go.
You know.
Yeah,
and that's okay if I wanted my iPad, but if I didn't, you know, okay, I mean, I would have had to turn it off on my iPad before I left, you know, that kind of thing. And who's going to do that? So it's interesting that the way the nags that you get out of the Find My app, but I think overall we don't have a choice. You need to put these restrictions and these protections into place, but I think that it does diminish the value or the use of the thing as well. A little bit, but that's a trade-off you got to make.
Right, right. So Apple's doing a couple of additional things. They're along with all of this. They're making Find My a little bit more precise in what you're mm-hmm. looking for and where it's going to be at. The AirTag will emit a louder sound. If it's an unknown AirTag and it's kind of tagging along with you. Apple is stating that the tracker will emit a sound after it's been separated from its owner at a random time
within an interval of 8
and 24 hours. So
I wonder at an airport how many people put these on their suitcases and the poor baggage area is squawking with these devices.
Oh, I wouldn't doubt it.
I always wondered about that.
I would not doubt that at all.
See, because I thought probably my bigger beef with them is the same beef that I have with a lot of Apple products, is that it only works on Apple products.
You have Find My on your Android.
To
an extent. You're absolutely right.
But it's amazing to me that the only ones who really know about Find My are folks like us. It's like my wife's like, yeah, I can't find my phone. I'm like, do you have your iPad? You can at least tell if it's here.
Yep.
And by the way, for devices like your phone and your iPad, if those are stolen, we don't lose any of the tracking ability because you can't take the tag off of that.
Right.
Make it go away because it's the device that's squawking. So there's still some value for that from Find My with those kinds of devices. But again, like you said, Joel, it's Apple ecosystem only, but I mean, that's the whole point of the way Apple's marketed it, come over into the dark side, it's the whole approach, right?
It's ironic too, that I just fired up Find My on my iPad sitting next to me. Apple was the first one to have my neighborhood in the app mm-hmm. streetwise.
Mm-hmm.
They're also the first ones that actually have houses drawn in place too.
Nice.
Isn't that interesting?
But Google finally did get it added, thank God. But
here.
But yeah, they needed to do some more updating. In fact, actually, I was looking at this. They're building houses behind me, and they actually have some of the ones that are currently being built drawn in on Apple Maps, which is kind of impressive.
I have to tell you, as time has gone on, and we all know that Apple Maps was a piece of crap in the beginning.
Yeah.
I would say I'm getting more and more impressed with it, and I'm more happy with the routes that it's choosing, even sometimes over the Google Maps routes. Sometimes I like the Apple Maps routes better. My point is, it's still moving, and it's moving at a quicker pace than I thought it would.
Right.
Right.
Agreed. Agreed. But I will tell you though, that there is one thing that's going to really affect the performance or the continued performance of any and every electronic device out there right now.
And getting them.
Yeah. WD has reported that there's 6.5 million terabytes of man flesh that has been contaminated and is effectively unusable.
Which means it's not going to affect your device. It's just going to affect getting one.
It's not going to affect your current. If you've got a device now, you're fine.
Right.
But if you're looking for any kind of a flash card or an SSD or any kind of anything that uses flash for storage.
Yeah.
So phones, tablets, medical devices,
anything that
incorporates flash, it's going to be difficult to get either cards or storage for a while. And this is the conspiracy theorist in me,
right?
That's working a little overtime, and I'm wondering, going, man, I'm sorry, how the hell do you go ahead and not notice contamination in your clean rooms, and have it affect 6.5 million terabytes?
Well, and I think what's important is, you know, it's Western Digital talking about it, but I think people don't always realize how many brands Western Digital holds. I mean, the biggest one, when we talk about flash RAM, one of the biggest ones we get out there is SanDisk. They got SanDisk. So that's going to affect that. That's going to potentially, it's going to affect all of this stuff. That's huge. And it's a lot of names that we might not be thinking about right now.
All the third party, no name. Vendors that are out there with, you know,
absolutely true.
And I'm making this up, but just some other, whatever the name storage is, .com who's got this off brand of a card on Amazon. They're going to be affected by this too. All right. And again, the conspiracy theorist in me really wants to know how much of this was actually planned and how much of it was just an accident, because with 6.5 million terabytes of storage effectively being completely and utterly useless, you may as well just seriously go ahead and set it all on fire, because none of it can be used. It really makes me wonder what the hell happened. And if this was not some form of espionage or some other nefarious criminal activity acted out by a nation state or some other country, because I mean, honest to goodness, kids, chip shortage, and we're still having a bad chip shortage. Now we're having a storage shortage, which basically means that electronics are going to get more and more expensive and harder to get.
Well, and that doesn't just impact, the stuff we absolutely love, technology things, but it affects vehicles too.
Vehicles,
and other devices.
Medical devices. And that's really what I'm most concerned about. You're going to have hospitals and urgent cares and other kinds of medical facilities who aren't going to be able to do what they do anymore.
Yep.
All right. Because medical imaging has all gone to NAND flash, right? Your wonderful little diabetes sensor that's sitting on your arm or your hip or your whatever, that's constantly monitoring your sugar 24 hours a day, that you pass your phone over every now and again.
And even the little stuff, like, again, when I got my car a couple months ago, I can get a stack of papers in a folder. I got a USB drive handed to me.
See,
with everything signed.
Neither did I.
But. Yeah, I got a owner's manual and papers and stuff, but I didn't get.
I got an owner's manual.
That's gotta be because you bought a Cadillac. But anyway,
but everything was done. Everything was done digitally on paper. All the papers were done on PDF. I signed everything on digital pads. And everything was handed to me on a USB stick at the end of the day. Yeah. And the point that I'm getting at is that this kind of, it isn't that is important as much as that the fact that it's all these little things that we don't even think about that go on in our daily lives, they're going to be impacted by the inability to get NAND.
Actually, there is one thing that was like that in my recent purchases. That was my house.
There you go.
When I closed my first house in 98, Dominion Homes, yeah, they gave me a couple folders, like a binders and stuff. Whereas D.R. Horton gave me a thumb drive that looks like a house. now, granted, I've copied everything off of it. And I don't use that thumb drive because it's pitifully small. But but yep, that but kind of still, stuff, too. It's like, you know.
Yep. And it I just see this is I like I said, color me a weird right wing, you know, nut job if you need to. But man, it really just kind of makes me, it's the first thing that hit my mind. How does a factory not notice 6.5 million terabytes of storage has got a problem? I'm sorry. You get, you may get, you know, a couple, 1 or 2 terabytes in before you start, you know, maybe you notice a problem or something, but not 6.5 million. I mean, come on, where the hell were your quality control people? All right.
It's funny because I'm usually the first person to tell you to avoid those websites that you peruse, but, right. but having said that, I'm teasing you, but having said that, I have to agree you always want to wonder, is it really just corporate stupidity here, or was something going on?
Or is something nefarious happening? And I'm
having said that, more often than not, it seems like it turns out when you find out years down the road, it turns out it wasn't something nefarious. It really was just corporate stupidity and not paying enough attention and slackness and laziness and not enough inspections. It's so often.
As part of corporate America, I 100% agree with you.
it is amazing how many corners you cut, and we don't think about it until something goes wrong. And so I'm more inclined to believe that it's probably just stupidity today. But but I would not rule out what you're saying.
No, it just kind of made me raise an eyebrow, and I'm just like, man, it just can't.
Yeah.
And on that, I'm going to be moving us on to our, because I can't, I'm going to move us on to our picks of the week,
right?
Because I just, it's either that or I'm just going to start crying.
Yeah, so, and trust me, I know what you mean, Chris, because we're probably going to be looking for yet another vehicle.
There you go.
Yeah, not looking forward to that. Well, my son's car had a check engine light on it.
Oh, dear.
And it's like, well, it's a 2016. It did go off, so I had an appointment for Friday scheduled.
That's probably a gas cap thing then, if it went off.
Yeah, well, it could be, because the other problem would go on and off too. But it's like, I'm to the point now where I'm like,
does he have a lot of miles on it?
Well, that's the thing, is if we were in a different time, I'd just keep it. The problem is whenever you make an appointment, like, for example, when it happened, I called the day it happened, and the best they could do was about 2 weeks from the.
Yeah, that's what I'm seeing from my dealers.
Then once you get it there, 7 to 10 days before they can probably look at it. So it's like, do I really want to deal with that, or do I get another vehicle? Now I started. And here's the other thing too. Vehicle prices are stupid now.
They are
true.
I looked at a used Chevrolet Cruze, one of the last years they were made, up at CarMax, probably has roughly same or a little bit less miles than my son's car currently has on it. $20,000. $6,000 more, and I got a brand new Trailblazer.
Well, unfortunately, the auto industry and the computer industry are now tied at the hip.
They are,
and that's just the way that it's going to work. So,
moving us on now, kids,
to our picks of the week. Joel, I for some reason, and I don't understand why I keep on doing this, I always skip you.
I'll go first
because I'm just gonna say, Joel, you go ahead and you go first, because this is really you mentioned this when we kicked the show off.
Yeah, I got one, my pick of the week, and probably, future review is going to be a Pixel 6 Pro. We already talked about it. I'm not going to go into it too much. The other pick of the week was Slackware has released version 15, the first release in about 10 years.
Yeah.
Which Slackware is one of the first Linux distros that ever existed.
Mm-hmm. Yes, it was.
And it's nice. It has a lot of up-to-date things. One thing I'm surprised it's not up-to-date is they still use Linux Loader, which really hasn't been supported for quite a long time now, as its default bootloader. I tried to do an install on some other hardware that I have. Couldn't really get Linux Loader because there is a way you can force it to use Grub afterwards, but I wasn't able to get the work, and you know, I got tired of dealing with it. And that's, I think, where I would say, would I recommend this distribution for a new and budding Linux wannabe? Heck to the no.
No, yeah.
go with Ubuntu, go with Fedora. You know, in fact, I just installed Fedora 35 actually on the same laptop, and I had it installed and going in less than 20 minutes. So but Slackware is for the Ubermensch or the Uber geek that really likes Windows. The only way you can get geekier is if you follow there are some instructions to build your own Linux distribution of sorts out there. Linux called Linux from scratch. That's the only way you can get geekier. Slackware, probably one of the geekier ones there, distros are there, followed by Arch Linux, which Arch straight up is just that way, but you can actually get some easier ways to install Arch. Unfortunately, there's nothing like that for Slackware. Patrick Volkerding, whom I've met in person. I got an after show story for you on that. That's going to be
okay.
okay. Cool.
But I really don't want to have that on the show. And when I say it, you'll understand why. And my friends who know me are already giggling.
oh dear.
But anyway, those are my two picks of the week. Looking forward to reviewing the Pixel 6 Pro when I finally do get it. But that's the plan right now. Now, there is always an outside chance that I pick something else.
True.
Because my until it's ordered, it's mm-hmm. not, it's not mm-hmm. for sure with me.
Yeah. But. It ain't over until it's over. So.
Yep. Yep.
So
that's my picks. I think we probably should let Chris go first because he has two.
And no, I'm going to go ahead and let. Chris G, yes. Chris, why don't you go ahead and give us your pick of the week?
Well, this is scary because you guys know that I am not a big one in terms of picks of the week.
No, true.
I have to really want something or like something or whatever it is for you to think to bring about. And I actually had two this week, which was a little scary. Mm-hmm. The first one, it's going to sound a little strange. It's been out for probably maybe a year or so now. It's an app. It's available on the Google Play Store and on the Apple Store. Mm-hmm. It's called Hidden Folks. It's just a little game. It's kind of a Where's Waldo kind of thing. They give you a bunch of things to look on the bottom, and they give you this picture that progressively you get more complicated pictures. And it is one of the most relaxing things I've ever played with. And as you click on the different things, they make the goofiest it's all handmade, mouth-made kind of sounds.
Mm-hmm.
So it's just the screwiest off kilter kind of game. Like I said, there's no time frame to it or anything like that, so you can take as long as you want. It's almost more of a puzzle than anything like that. But I think the big thing is it's kind of come to the forefront again because I think Apple just added it to their Apple Arcade offering. You know, their monthly subscription offering.
Mm-hmm.
But it's a fascinating thing. It's available, like I said, on all the mobile platforms. I have it on the MacBook as well. So just something I find fascinating. Every now and then I run into something like that just sort of catches my attention and keeps me focused for a while. And that's taken quite a bit. So the other thing that I wanted to list as a pick is because it kind of, and it's mostly because this struck me in an unexpected way. Mm-hmm. And that is the first generation Surface Duo. And the reason it struck me in an interesting way is because in the last couple of weeks, they finally released their Android 11 update. And you might all go, well, Android 11, but people understand what, when the Duo came out, and even when the Duo 2 came out, they were a bit challenged out the door and had some, and didn't work quite like they should have. This Android 11 update has taken care of a lot of it and made it feel like a very competent device. On top of that, you can still buy the Surface Duo 1. Mm-hmm. There's a lot of units on Amazon, starting as low as like $399 and going up. That's a huge discount off the current Surface Duo 2 price.
Yes, it is. Did I lose you guys? Joel, are you still there?
I'm here.
Chris must have dropped off.
No, I'm here.
No, he's okay. Here. He's okay. Just getting a robot-y.
Okay.
So what I'm finding is, so for the price is very, very good. And if you use this as a phone, this probably isn't the device for you. If you're looking for something that's a little more productivity kind of oriented, but you don't really want to spend the money on like a Samsung Fold, this can be had at a very reasonable price, and it's a very common device at its price. It's surprising how solid it's become compared to what it had been. And so at that price point, I'm happy to recommend it as a pick.
Okay. Well, good deal. Good deal. That kind of leaves me, and I've got more than a few here. I wanted to go ahead and speak to this last week, or last time, but unfortunately, we caught the bug over here, and it was a very difficult time. My wife was really not doing well, so we had to kind of cut things quick, and I did not go through my picks last time. So I've got two from last time, and I've got one for this week. The first one is really it's probably one of my favorite things that I have found and am using currently. I went and I finally got myself a CarPlay compatible, Android Auto compatible head unit for my 2014 Toyota Highlander. 2014 year for Toyota. They did not they were pushing back hard against Apple CarPlay and Android Auto. They just didn't want to support it. They wanted to go with their own infotainment system, just simply right. Because they didn't want to pay the licensing fees. They've kind of been worn down a little bit, and I think all of their newer cars from 2019 forward are going to have CarPlay as the infotainment CarPlay or Android Auto as the compatible infotainment system in their vehicles. So I went and I bought myself a CarPlay compatible, Android Auto compatible head unit, but it was a wired unit. And I always, you know, have always said, well, I need some place to, in some way to power the phone while it's in the car. Audio transfers better over cable than it does over wireless. So I don't want a wireless CarPlay installation in my vehicle. I want wired because it sounds better and I've got to charge the device anyway. Well, you know, enter Apple's MagSafe charging system and a couple of holder units, MagSafe compatible units to hold the device in the car. And the fact that you plug that into my head unit and it just absolutely just goes bananas. It doesn't like it at all. It won't power it, doesn't know what to do with it, etc. So I ran into a little bit of a problem with it. The magnet obviously still works, but you had to constantly plug the thing in and out, and I got a little bit tired of doing that. So I went and I went on a hunt, and I found this particular wireless CarPlay adapter. It is a wonderful little USB kit. The unit in and of itself is about as big as a business or credit card, and about maybe a quarter of an inch thick. You plug this into the USB port in the vehicle. You have your both your Wi-Fi and your Bluetooth on. Discover the little unit, and it will hook you up and then run CarPlay wirelessly through Wi-Fi. And it's just like you had a factory installed wireless CarPlay unit in your car. I was a little skeptical, but I thought, well, you know what? I can always return the thing. The Kohl's is just down the street and they process Amazon returns. So it's easy just to walk in and drop it off and say it doesn't work and get my money back. But, you know, it's not bad. It's not bad at all. It installed very quickly, very easily. Just plug it into the USB port. It comes up and displays its screen on your head unit screen. You pair your device with Bluetooth. After that, it happens, and it sees your phone for the very first time. It takes about maybe 20 to 30 seconds to do that and get everything communicated and set up, and then a CarPlay just appears out of nowhere. All right. It's really kind of interesting. Coming back into the vehicle after you go into a store, you come back to your car. It takes about maybe 3 to 5 seconds for this thing to actually see your phone and display it right up. And it's really kind of cool. So initially the thing was $120. And I got it through a Lightning deal for $92 over on Amazon. And now it is showing a permanent price reduction to $92 available on Amazon right now.
Interesting.
Go ahead.
I know what you're saying about wireless versus wired, because I had a 2014 and the Bluetooth wireless it worked, but it sounded terrible compared to the wired. But on my current one, which is a 2021, wireless sounds great.
Same here. Yeah, actually, I think mine will want to connect to the Wi-Fi on the car, even if you don't have the 4G active, and it uses that for its connection.
Yeah,
so it's got a little bit more bandwidth than the Bluetooth.
Yep,
I think that's exactly why it sounds good, because mine's doing the same thing.
Right. Yep.
Yep. I will say that there is a little bit of lag on the controls. And it's not as quick or as seamless as you might think.
Yeah, but for a bolt-on, that's still pretty good.
It's really very, very good.
Now, one thing I wonder with that, Chris, is does that also work with Android Auto as
No, it does not.
Interesting.
This one does not. Because honestly, I thought, well, you know, with the Pixel 6 Pro, all right.
Right.
I thought it might be really interesting to go ahead and be able to swap them back and forth in the car. Right. I can pair it. I can pair it with this device. All right. I can pair the Pixel 6 Pro, but it will not activate Android Auto. So
I just put in
Carling there. Kit 3. All right. Is the name of the device. Carling Kit 3 wireless CarPlay adapter is really just for CarPlay. Related.
Have you seen anything that they maybe are going to offer Android Auto as well?
I did not see that. And what I want to get away from Amazon just a little bit. And I've got to figure out a better way to search for it. But there should be something out there that does both.
There's one that does Android, and that's the Motorola MA1.
Yeah, I saw that. But they want
$89.
Yeah, they do. And then you've got to swap them back and forth and back and forth. Just want one unit, because I just want to enter the car with the phone and then pick the phone that I want to use.
And let's face it, most of the newer cars, we have both now, right? You can turn on both, enable both, connect to both.
Right. And it's all wireless anyway. I, for whatever reason, I could not find a wireless CarPlay head unit out there and available. Back in December when I got this thing installed.
Interesting.
I just couldn't find one. They were not available. They were all sold out.
Now, I was a little worried about this when we tried it. But my wife said, I need to charge my phone. and she put and we were driving someplace, and I had my Android Auto I use my Android Auto all the time. Mm-hmm. She plugged her phone in and CarPlay did not come up, which I thought was pretty interesting.
Well, on mine you have to enable it in the settings on the car.
Right.
If they're both enabled, what I found is when you bring the device that it hasn't seen last, it'll ask you, do you want to switch? And that's what mine does.
Yeah, right. Mine didn't do that. It didn't even do that. So I wonder if actually I have to look and see if I have. Maybe I need to make sure I have both active, because my wife uses her iPhone and she, you know, I know she's seen how nice it is to have the map up all the time.
Yep. Yeah,
that's like it. Even though if I'm listening to something, I usually have the Google Maps up all the time because it has the little nav links on there and tells me how far I'm away from home.
Right. I have that. I always have that split screen up that's showing the maps and then showing whatever I'm playing on the device. Right. I love that stuff.
Yep. Absolutely. But, that's exactly what I do too.
Yep.
So, but it's not bad.
Right.
And for $92, all right, less than $100,
I thought it was worth the time and the effort to make it happen. So, and if it didn't work, I don't like the way that it, and I can always just go ahead and swap cables and swap devices if I have to and take it back. So, we'll see what happens. One of the things though that I did also buy to go ahead and sort of complement since I cannot plug the MagSafe compatible charger that I have in the vehicle into the USB port, because it makes the
not enough power.
It makes the head unit go glitchy, and if I've got my this gadget plugged in to the USB port, well then, you know, I'm stuck anyway. I needed something to provide a couple of different charging ports in the vehicle, right? All I've got left is the cigarette lighter port, right? So I figure, I need to find some kind of something or other that'll work with it. And what I found was the Anope's smallest 4.8 amp all metal charger adapter for $11.99, also on Amazon. And this thing sits flush with the car, so nothing really sticks out. So when you put this thing in, it's like it was built in. You can close the cover. You can close the cover on the ports, because you know those adapter ports on your vehicle usually have a cover over the top of them, and you just pop the top off, and it just kind of flips up and stays up.
Nice.
You can go ahead and put this adapter in the slot, and then still close the cap on the port if you wish.
So it's going into your lighter outlet?
Yes.
I gotcha.
All right. And then it's got a spot for two different USB-A ports on it. And you just plug your cable into that. So if you've got a USB-A to lightning cable for iPhone, or a USB-A to USB-C or micro USB for Android devices, depending on your generation of Android device, you're good to go. It'll charge both. All right. And at the same time.
Do they make a C version of it?
I do not know, but I would not doubt it. If you've got USB-C to USB-C, you might need a USB-C to USB-A adapter.
Yeah.
All right. Cool. But for $11.99, it's really nice. It's all metal. It's got a nice little blue a blue light that comes on when you've got a device connected to that particular port. It's really very, very good looking. So really, really kind of like that a lot. And it solved a couple of problems. I've now got my MagSafe charger plugged into that. And then there's still one port free for an iPhone cable for my wife when she's in the passenger seat.
So I'm actually looking online, and they do in fact have not a pair of C's, but an A and a C combo. So they do.
That's good. Good. That's good to hear. The last and final pick that I've got, I ran into this just while surfing the internet the other day. Toshiba has got a newer a portable hard drive out there. It's a nice black unit, the Canvio basic hard drive. It runs oh gosh, I'm just trying to look to see on this thing if it's got because I haven't even really opened this thing. I haven't even taken it out of the box yet. But it came the other day. It runs off of a USB cable, right? So you need some sort of portable storage for when you're out and about for whatever. These are really nice. You know, having a USB drive with at least a terabyte of storage space on it, if you're doing any sort of video work or audio work, or even if you just need a backup drive to set up some kind of a backup process while you're out. They've got three different sizes for this nasty little bad boy, and the prices on this are just absolutely amazing. I thought they've got 1 terabyte, 2 terabyte, and 4 terabyte size drives. The 1 terabyte portable hard drive is $42. All right. The 2 terabyte is $54, and the 4 terabyte is $85. So for under $100, you can go ahead and get yourself some nice NAND flash storage. And if seeing how those things may be a little bit scarce coming up in the weeks and months to come, if you're looking for some storage, now may be the time, kids. For $85, four terabytes arrived the other day. So
the only downside I see of them, well, it's part of their basics line. And I think part of the way they're getting the price down is they're using 5,400 RPM drives instead of 7,200.
Oh, really? Are they doing drives?
Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah.
They're slower mechanical drives. It's okay. I mean, for what it is, if you're looking for long-term backup storage, that's fine.
Perfect. Yeah.
Yeah. So,
well, what I was actually looking for was a drive to do backups on my Windows machines. Right.
Yeah. Yeah.
That's what I was really looking for. So yeah. I can go ahead and set that up, stick it on the docking station for I've got over there for the Surface Book 3 and the Surface Laptop Studio.
Right.
And just let it go to town, you know? So that's what I was looking for. And that's why I got it. So a 5,400 RPM drive, it's fine. But for under $100 for 4 terabytes,
not a bad little deal.
Not a bad little deal. This is not something that you're going to be running video off of, but still not a bad little.
Well, again, storage. If your purpose is to just, you know, store your documents, store your backups.
Yeah.
You're not trying to do, you know,
not doing any editing work. It is a basics. It is a basics product. You're right there.
Right.
All
right.
That price point, you know, look, come on, at that price point, that's 4 terabytes is a lot of storage.
It is
for under $100.
Absolutely, and well under $100.
Yeah, all right. Comfortably
under $100 for 4 terabytes of space is not bad at all. So I am really very pleased with that. I'll be adding that to the rig over here on the Windows side of the desk, and that should make it a much happier sort of setup.
Yep.
Very cool.
It is. It is. I was actually very pleased to have found that.
One thing I'm disappointed.
Go ahead. Yeah, no, all the links that for the stuff for all of my picks are going to be on the show notes. Yep. So for our fan or for Larry, who may be listening,
right?
That stuff is there, and you can just go ahead and click on it and let it rip.
And let me just say, Larry, feel better. We love you.
Yes,
we do.
We do. We do, Bubba. He's like a father to me. He really, really is. He's a great guy. So, well, that's just about it, kids. Unless you guys have got anything else.
I think it's amazing.
It is.
So had a great time again, guys.
Yes, absolutely. So this is Christopher Sparrow. This has been the iTech Gear Weekly, episode number 11. You get a Pixel 6 Pro, recorded Saturday, February 12th. 2022. We'll see you next time, kids.
Yeah.